Ladies and gentlemen, now boarding for Latitude, the travel photography podcast on the Improve Photography Network. And now your hosts, Brian McGuckin and Brent Bergherm.
Welcome back. This is Latitude, the travel photography podcast, and I am Brian McGuckin, and I am flying solo today. Brent is not with us. However, we have replaced him with someone who is much prettier than Brent, and that is Elise Bender, also known to the Improved Photography Group as Bender. Hey, Bender, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being willing to join us on the episode today.
Not a problem.
Those of you that are familiar or have been on any of the workshops with Improved Photography, you probably have met Bender before. She has been to a handful of them. I know I was just with her in Arizona. Before that, actually, the last time we met was in Arizona as well.
Yes, or at Washington, the Zion meetup.
Yeah. Bender, the reason why I invited her on the show today is because every time I've met her, she's been by herself. I am aware that she is married and currently living in Japan. So I thought it would be great to have her on the episode to kind of give some tips for solo female travelers, because I know there are a lot of female listeners out there. And a lot of times, honestly, as a guy, I don't think about the topics that maybe the women would be interested in hearing about. And so we thought this is a great opportunity to have somebody on who can share about their travel and their experiences. Bender, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, where you live, what you like to shoot, and how you travel?
I'm primarily a nature photographer, so landscapes, wildlife. I do some travel, obviously. As I travel around the world, I do some travel photography where getting the iconic photo of wherever I'm at, whether it's Bangkok, Thailand, here in Japan, or back in the States. And then I am over here in Japan because my husband's military, and I am kind of following on his coattails as we travel around the world due to his career. So I'm lucky in that aspect that we are in a career that does allow us to travel. So it makes it a bit easier for me.
Since you do have that time to travel, where are some of the places that you've been to?
Between my military career when I was in and now, I've done Thailand, I've done Palau, I was stationed on Guam for 4 years, and I've traveled extensively in the United States along both seaboards, especially the Northeast, Southeast, and Southwest Pacific Northwest. I've done extensive photo expeditions, if you will, in all of those locations within the U.S.
As you've been stationed in those places, have all those also been locations where you've gone out to shoot?
I've done shooting in multiple locations, in Guam, in Thailand. Thailand was a 3-week backpacking trip, specifically on trying to get photos from around Thailand. Palau was a diving trip. I did some minor newbie-like underwater photography there, and I've done some travel in the Caribbean, more cruises versus photography, though, in those areas.
And obviously in Japan as well, I'm sure you
yes.
go out on shoots. I've seen pictures posted a lot.
Yes, we're actually gearing up for cherry blossom season right now. That should be happening. I'm in northern Japan, so we're still a couple weeks off, even though Kyoto and Tokyo have already started blossoming and are kind of tailing off at this point.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing those pictures. But let's go ahead and let's just jump in.
Sure.
Because I know that I posted on the Facebook group, which, by the way, great time for me to plug that. If you are listening to this podcast, jump on over to Facebook and join the Latitude Facebook group that we have for this. It's a great place to share about some tips and ideas about some locations and how other people are traveling, and some people are sharing their pictures. But it's a great place for also just to be able to ask questions, especially to Elise Bender, who is our guest today. And on there, a handful of questions have been popping up. Elise has come up with, Bender, she prefers Bender, so we're going to call her that. She's come up with a list of what she would say are kind of the top 9 tips for solo female travelers. Beforehand, let me just say that these are just tips that work for her. Obviously, your personality makes up a lot of who you are and how comfortable you are with traveling and what you like to do and carry with you and so forth. These are tips that Bender came up with. And I believe they're in no particular order. So Bender, go ahead. What's our first tip?
First tip, and it kind of, this one works for everybody, is always let someone know where you are going and when you're expected back. I do a lot of solo hiking, and even if it's just a day trip, I still let somebody know and when I'm supposed to be back. If my husband's not here on station, I let one of my friends or one of my neighbors know. Always doing that ensures that if for any reason my car breaks down, I fall down a cliff, we have those here in Japan, anything like that, they will send help within a timely manner. Also, it allows me to have that backup plan of if I'm in a more populated area versus the backwoods, if something were to go down, somebody knows where I am. If all I can do is place a phone call in a tight situation and be like, hey, I need you to come get me.
I think that's a great tip. And I think that's an obvious tip. However, it's not one that I do a very good job of following. Usually when I say goodbye to my wife, her only kind of agreement is that I share things with her before I post them on social media. So that way, she doesn't have people coming up to her saying, oh, hey, I saw Brian's doing this or Brian's doing that. I need to definitely do a better job of just informing people where I'm going to be and so forth. You know, most of the time it's been with groups. I did kind of give her a layout of, oh, I'll be in this country that day or this country the next day with some of the travel photography work that I've done. But yeah, that's something I definitely need to work on. And that, I mean, that's a given. That's just common sense that people should be doing it. And that especially includes myself. So great. Good tip there. All right. What'd you got for us? What's number two?
Number two is definitely women specific, and that is use what you are given. So go ahead and use your bra as a little place that you can store an extra credit card, some extra cash. That way you have a safety stash in case you get pickpocketed, mugged, anything like that when going out. You have it right there. It's not necessarily a place somebody's going to look for additional cash if they're asking for your wallet. Just make sure you go to the restroom before attempting to retrieve it for use.
That's a great idea. I have this little pouch that's made by Rick Steves. It's kind of like a thin pouch.
Yes.
And that's where I put my passport, credit cards, some cash, and it hooks onto my belt, but then it kind of flips in into my pants.
Right.
And I wear it right there in the front. And I mean, no one's going to be able to get their hands in there. My belly kind of blocks it. So, I think, you know, that makes sense using, you know, like you said, what you have in order to do that. It's funny. I often make fun of my mom because my mom will often pull her cell phone out from that area. You know, I think it's kind of the older generation with their cell phones. They tend to kind of hide their phones there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my cell phone's probably the size of a small paperback book at this point. And so it would be a little bit harder for me to carry it there. Definitely cash and a card makes it super easy to have and not get lost.
I think the key to that is something that you mentioned with having it kind of spread out. I will put some cash in some pockets and then in my shoes underneath the sole, the insert of the shoe. I lift that up and I'll put a little bit of cash in there as well. You know, in case for some reason my shoe does come off, they look in, they're not going to see it unless they kind of rip it apart.
Right.
So that's a great tip. And especially just how you mentioned to excuse yourself first. So that way someone who may be following you doesn't see where you're reaching to grab your money.
Right. Well, and especially with women, a lot of women, if you're traveling, you know, the Mediterranean, the Caribbean, any tropical place, most likely you're going to be having sandals on unless you're going for a really rugged hike. So the shoe trick, while I use it quite frequently, doesn't work in all situations. But for most women, you are always going to have something up top.
That's good.
So
good point. All right, good. And number three.
Number three is just dress conservatively. Don't dress for attention when you're out. You already have, especially as photographers, we're carrying around thousands of dollars worth of gear. A lot of times, the last thing you want is extra attention. So whether you're in the States, whether you're in Southeast Asia, whether you're in the Middle East or Europe, you should dress conservatively, dress to blend in. Don't call attention to yourself with your form of dress. So be respectful of the cultures that you're going to be visiting. And many of those cultures are more conservative, whether it's here in Southeast Asia with the temples for the Buddhists and Hindus, or the Middle East with the Muslim cultures. It's a very conservative dress, covering the shoulders, covering down to the knees at least, if not all the way to the ankles.
And I think what's important there is all in the planning and researching ahead to find out what is appropriate and what's not appropriate.
Absolutely. Just because you see other tourists doing it doesn't make it right. There's been plenty of times I've been, since most of my travel's been here in Southeast Asia, there's been plenty of times I've seen women there visiting temples, having a good time in their shorts and a tank top, or they're coming out of a restaurant and they're still in their bathing suit. While the locals are most likely not going to say anything to you, because a lot of the cultures are, at this point, the economies are tourist driven, it's not respectful. And it draws attention to yourself. The last thing, like I said, with as much gear as we tend to carry, the last thing we want is more attention.
And I like this one. Tip number four.
Tip number four is a simple wedding band is suggested. Whether you're married or not, it can help keep unwanted attention away and gives the appearance that you might not be traveling alone. Even for the single ladies out there, if you're traveling, I do suggest even just a simple sterling silver wedding band, and it will keep a lot of male or unwanted attention off of you.
Now, do you think it matters as far as which country you're in when it comes to that? Because I believe in some countries they wear the wedding band on the right hand, where in the United States, it's traditional to wear it on the left.
I haven't come across any that it really matters, because they still see you as a foreigner. So they're going to kind of put it down as maybe a foreign difference. But again, doing your research beforehand can help determine whether or not you want to wear it on the left or the right hand.
Oddly, I actually kind of heard the opposite when it comes to men traveling. I've heard that some men intentionally take off their wedding bands just because if for some reason somebody were to try to kidnap you, you know, if you have a wedding band on, then they know that you have a family and they feel like they could use that to their advantage. Whether it's true or not, in any of my travels, I spent a month traveling through Central and South America and I didn't bother doing that. It's interesting how you're saying women should wear them and how I've also heard before that men should take them off. But good point with that.
Right.
Tip number five.
Tip number five is look as if you know where you're going. Confidence is key. So even if you don't know where you're going, look as if you do until you can get to an area where you can get off the street, maybe into a cafe or a shop, and then check your map, check your phone. Ask questions to the shopkeeper. I don't typically ask people I just meet on the street because, one, they may not know either. Two, you never really know what their background is. Whether if I step into a cafe, I'm going to expect a barista or a waitress or hostess to kind of know the area, and I know that they're at their job. So they're in a professional manner, gives them a bit more reputable than just somebody wandering on the street next to me.
And I believe that that's true for men as well. But I would also think especially for women, you know, just to show that confidence. And tip number six.
Tip number six is carry a whistle. Again, I feel like this could go for both male and female, but especially for females, there's not really a situation that a whistle is not going to be a good idea. Whether it's out in the backcountry, you can use it to scare away bear, cougar, signal for help if you get into trouble. Same goes for inner city. If somebody is trying to grab your wallet or purse and you have that whistle, you're able to use it, and a loud sound a lot of times will startle people so they can turn and run away on their own, leave you be, or at least draw attention to yourself that something is happening.
Do you actually carry one with you?
I do. I have a little one that I had picked up, I think, at Walmart years back. It has a tiny little compass in it and the whistle and some other little safety type survival tool attached to it. Only a few dollars, and I carry one on each bag.
And I know a lot of camera bags, a lot of the hiking ones at least that I've tested out before, they have the whistle actually built into the clip. I had a bag for a while and didn't even realize it was on there. But if you look at the clips, sometimes the plastic clip where it would clip together has like a little whistle that's actually built into that. And so that's kind of a feature that's nice to have on your bag to where you don't have to worry about, oh, did I grab the whistle? Do I have it or not?
Well, and another one that I've seen and I have on my winter jacket for when I'm snowboarding is it's actually the whistle's built into the zipper pull. So that's a feature that you can look for on even your clothing. And then, you know, if you're wearing your jacket, you know you have the whistle.
And tip number seven.
Number seven is always be aware of your surroundings and know your exit routes. This is, maybe this goes back to my military training, but this has always been a big thing for me, is always be aware of your surroundings. You won't normally catch me out listening to my music when I'm in the woods or walking down the street. I always have kind of all my senses about me. Always surveying, looking around, you know, that way you kind of are able to notice, well, is that person following me every turn I take? And if I suddenly duck in here, is that person still following me? Or are they making eye contact with buddies across the street? You know, that sort of thing. Just kind of keeping aware of your surroundings, both in city environments and even in Mother Nature, with snakes, bears, spiders, cliffs, anything like that, you want to know what you're coming up against.
So you're saying that Nick Page should be aware if he's next to a cliff that he should not let his camera lens fall off?
Yeah, you know, that is one time you're sneaking up on them. So yeah, that's one you should look out for.
And if you have no clue what I'm talking about, just send Nick Page a message and he'll be happy to share the story with you. But that is good. That's true about anything when you're traveling. It's always be aware of where you're at. Don't put yourself in a bad position. If you're going to a restaurant, you maybe don't want to be in a spot where you're kind of sitting in a corner. You want to always have kind of an escape route.
I typically will, especially if they put me at, when I'm traveling solo, if a hostess will seat me at a two-person table, I will typically always have it so that I'm looking at my exit. I'm looking at the front door. I don't typically put my back to a door or to an exit because that I want to know who's coming and going.
Very good. Tip number eight.
Tip number eight is limit your alcohol consumption. This is something that I wondered whether I should put in here or not, but when I'm on the road traveling solo, I rarely drink. It clouds the senses and it goes back to being aware. And I'm not saying don't ever drink or be afraid to drink, but it's one less opportunity that somebody has to get something over on you, whether it's spiking a drink. If you're not going out to a bar, if you're not going out to have drinks in an environment that you're not fully used to, you don't have the opportunity to have a drink poisoned and then have whatever repercussions come from that. And if you know your limits and have just one or two, then you also have less likelihood of anything coming up from having your senses impaired due to alcohol.
Good. Yeah. And again, that's another one that you would think would be common sense. But when people are out a lot, some people like to have a drink to kind of relax and enjoy. And it's that type of situation that you don't want to be in.
Maybe it should be limit your alcohol consumption in public. If you're in your own hotel room and you've, you know, picked something up from the shop, I'm not saying don't do it that way, but try to avoid or limit your consumption in public.
And I feel like I should insert a drum roll for this one. But so drum roll, there it is. And tip number nine.
Tip number nine is when talking with strangers, be vague as to where you're staying and where you're going next. Use the word we and make up a friend or a husband that may be meeting with you or traveling with you. Don't ever tell anybody exactly the hotel that you're staying at or your room number. If it's a cab, you know, if you're taking transportation, obviously you have to tell them the hotel, but never the room number or anything like that. When making conversation, you could always be like, well, we're here visiting and I'm out here photographing. My husband's waiting back in the room. Or in my case, even if my husband is with me, a lot of times he likes to sleep in. And so sunrises are not his thing. So if I meet people out there, it's still always a, oh, yeah, we're here. Doing this, doing that. It's never, oh, I'm here alone, because that just makes you an additional target if somebody did have not so good thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And that's good. And I think something to add to that is also maybe if you feel like you're being followed or you're uncomfortable, is take out your phone and just start video recording. And as you're recording, you know, show it, turn it around, and even maybe show it at the person who may be following you and talk to it as if, you know, if you even need to just be so bold to be like, yeah, here I am, I'm walking down the street, this person keeps following me, I'm not sure why, but, you know, just to kind of put out there, hey, they don't know if you're bluffing or maybe you're doing some like Facebook Live type thing where now people are going to see them. And that's just an additional way, I think, to kind of protect yourself, is just fake a friend or fake like you're on your phone as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And on that same note, if you do suspect someone is following you, don't go back to your room, because that just leads them back to where you're staying. Go find some other public place to sit down, like a cafe. If I'm not photographing, I'm normally eating, unfortunately, for my waistline, but it's great for everything else. If you go into a cafe and you're sitting there and somebody comes in and you think that they've been following you, most of the time you can approach, whether it's a female waiter or the hostess at the stand in front, and let them know that you need help. And a lot of times, you know, they're more than willing to lend a hand, whether that's showing you out a back route out of the cafe or calling assistance for you, anything of those natures. Just kind of find a friendly face. And again, cafes, shopkeepers, they're professionals. They want your business. They don't want trouble. So they're going to try and limit that.
I was watching something the other day. I don't know if it was about like, maybe it was on somebody's travel video thing or something, but I've heard this before, is the last thing you ever want to do is get into somebody else's car, whether like voluntarily or to be forced into somebody's car. Once you're in somebody else's car, they can take you to someplace that's worse. And so I've heard, fight back in whatever way you need to. You know, I've got a daughter, she's 14, and she has already been to Haiti. She's leading a trip there this summer. She wants to travel. And so I haven't taken the time to give her any like self-defense classes, but I've told her the basics. Stick your thumbs in the eyeballs and push, you know, punch them in the throat, kick them in the privates, scratch, scream, whatever it takes for you to be able to get away is what you got to do. Having a daughter and thinking about women traveling, you know, that's something that is always a fear of mine.
And self-defense courses, especially for those who are super nervous to go out on their own, but find themselves in a situation where if they don't go alone, then they aren't going to go, take a self-defense course, build that confidence to get out there and know that you can rescue yourself, that you don't have to have others with you. For me, it's just been one of those things. My dad's a Marine, so I was raised kind of already knowing tips like you told your daughter. And so I just haven't had that level of fear that stops me. Not saying I haven't had scary moments or encounters, but I just haven't let it stop me, because to me doing what makes me happy is bigger and better than anything that somebody else can throw at me. And those instances are so very rare where I get into a situation that I'm not really feeling that's dangerous or sketchy. They're so very rare. It's not that everybody's out to get you. I've met so many friendly people and so many helpful people while on the road that it's just been an absolute wonderful experience for me to travel solo.
Well, you know what? I'm going to use this as a transition into some of the questions that listeners had, because a lot of these questions are kind of similar to it. The top question obviously was about safety. Do you carry a weapon with you, or how do you stay safe, or what do you do intentionally? So basically, from what you just said, I'm assuming that you don't carry any type of weapon. Do you carry a knife with you or anything?
Well, actually, here in Japan, carrying weapons is illegal. So again, do your research before heading out and trying to carry a weapon with you. Here, I do carry bear spray if I'm going into the backcountry, because they have very aggressive black bears here. So I am allowed to carry that when in the backwoods, but it wouldn't fly if I'm on a subway in Tokyo. In the States, I would carry a machete with me, and that was primarily for whenever I was sleeping. It was when I was in my car, when I was in the front country, if you will. Other than that, you're carrying a tripod and a camera. And anybody who was with me in Oregon knows the tripod I used to carry was a minimum of 10 pounds alone of metal. And to swing that like a baseball bat, that's your weapon right there. And as photographers, especially landscape photographers, if you're going out for sunrise and sunset, you have a tripod. So you have a weapon.
Yeah, I think that's a great weapon, and you've got it on you. You know, now if you have it in your backpack, it may be a little bit harder to, you know, unhook and to get to, but maybe being intentional about carrying it in your hand when you're in the woods or areas that may be a little bit more risky. One of the questions from one of the listeners, and I'm going to try to pronounce some names just to give a shout out to them, but I am horrible at some of these. Radhika Dixit, she asks, when you go out for landscapes early in the morning, how do you stay safe? You mentioned you're having your tripod with you, carrying the machete when you're in the States. Is there anything else specific that you're intentional about?
Just being aware of the surroundings, knowing my location. So here it's, again, my biggest concern when I'm out shooting landscapes here is going to be bears. So I carry bear spray with me for sunrise. If I'm going towards the ocean, no, I don't really carry anything with me other than my gear. And again, I'm willing to use my gear as a weapon in a situation if I had to.
Okay. And yeah, the bear spray, I mean, you could use that on people too. So it's not like absolutely. You just need it just for that. You know, carrying some type of pepper spray, I guess, would be helpful. A question from Katie McCartney. She asks, do you travel abroad by yourself? If so, what do you take to not be a nervous wreck? And how do you deal with gear if there's no one to help carry it on hikes?
Well, I do travel abroad by myself. As I mentioned, several years ago, I did 3 weeks in Thailand solo. I traveled Japan by myself quite frequently, as my husband's work schedule does not allow for him to go with me a lot of times. So when I go, I just go. I don't really, there's nothing I really take other than confidence to help me get through it. I don't really get nervous traveling by myself. I started out traveling solo locally before I went internationally. So that may be just stepping stones, working yourself up to being comfortable rather than trying to find a quick fix, take something over the counter. Be confident with yourself in going out. As for the second part of the question, so far as carrying gear, I take what gear I can carry. So I've worked myself up to the point where I want to carry 3 or 4 lenses, 2 camera bodies, and my tripod. So my bag typically weighs about 25 to 30 pounds, and I just carry it by myself. I don't ever, even if my husband's there, I don't expect him to actually carry the bag for me.
He'd probably just laugh at you and be like, well, you're the one that chose to bring it.
He actually, most of the time, if he is there, he does offer. And it makes me feel really bad because I know exactly how heavy it is. And so I'm like, no, you don't really have to. And he's like, yeah, I'll take it.
So you don't sacrifice any gear?
No.
Now, do you have a backpack that is intentionally lighter?
I do. I have a day pack. I have the Everyday Backpack by Peak Design that I use for my day trips. Again, it'll carry what I need for the shoot that I'm going out for, which is normally 2 cameras, a wide angle and a telephoto. I'll normally throw a mid-range lens in there as well and strap the tripod to the outside. And it's really super easy to carry. Take the tripod off the outside and I can even carry it when I'm snowboarding.
Yeah, and I love the way the tripod gets held onto that, where you've got the 3 legs and one of the legs goes inside the cover of the design bag. And then, you know, pops out the other end, and then you put that little wristband on there. Have you noticed?
That's the
Everyday Messenger.
The Messenger. I have the actual backpack. I have the 30-liter backpack.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, and they have a couple different configurations for tripods on that.
I know that there have been a few listeners over the past who have asked about backpacks and backpacks specifically for women and what's easier for them. What type of bag did you use before that?
The bag I used before that and what I still use now for overnight trips or international trips is a Click Elite. There, I believe it's the Express Pro, and that fits all my gear, plus my laptop, plus a rain jacket, my water bottle, it will carry the entire works. Everything you add adds weight, but I have carried it multiple miles for hiking up trails when I was in Maine throughout the Smoky Mountains. It's not light, but I do it. It's a labor of love.
There were a couple questions of people just asking about when you're shooting landscapes, when you go out early for the sunrise or late at night for the sunset and all. Do you ever get concerned about going too far or maybe getting thrown off your trail? Do you have any other, do you use any type of GPS or any other specific gear to help you with that?
I do always carry a map of the area, an actual paper map. GPSs, phones, those are great, but I've gotten into too many situations where I don't have signal, the battery dies halfway through the day, and coming back, I don't have anything. So I always carry a paper map of where I'm going, whether it's a small trail map from the State Park Visitor Center or an actual detailed map that the NGS puts out.
I've also heard that if you've got, you know, if you're going out like locally, is bringing a dog with you. I know I've seen some women who do some outdoor photography who had mentioned about they take their German Shepherd with them and just yes. How that's great security. I mean, obviously you got to be aware of your dog and how it interacts with other animals, because clearly you're going to see some other animals when you're out in the wild like that. But that's also a great kind of security blanket to have with you.
Yes. And I do that as well when I travel locally. Back in the States, a lot of times I would take my dog with me. But you also have to be aware that if you are going to be sitting in an area for landscape waiting, make sure that your dog is fully trained. So it's not getting antsy. He's comfortable just waiting with you. I've seen enough dogs out there that are not good with that. And so you see people being pulled all over the place, and that's really not conducive to photography.
Okay, let's jump into clothes. Is there any specific clothing that you always bring with you when you travel? Like, for example, for me, I always have a hat. I know hats are very American, and clearly I stand out. I mean, I look American anyways, you know, 6'1", 200 and some pounds. I stand out. So for me, it's a hat because I use it. I don't have to worry about my hair or anything like that. I can use it to cover up my eyes when I'm sleeping and resting, and it protects me from the sun. Do you have any specific particular piece of clothing that you like to always take with you?
I typically will wear lightweight cargo pants put out by REI in Colombia. Those are my go-to when it comes to photographing, hiking, traveling in general. They wear really well. You can use them several days without having to worry. Normally water resistant, stain resistant, just good all-around pants that wear really well and are comfortable.
That's, I think, exactly the outfit that you had on in Arizona. And we were out at, what was it?
Los Dutchman State Park.
There you go. That's where we were. And you spent the night there. You were camping there by yourself, right?
Yes.
And is that common for you to go and just camp in the middle of nowhere by yourself?
Oh, yeah. And they have a campground there. And so it was just on the other side of the road. So I had my campground spot, and I had my, because I was coming from Japan, I didn't bring my tent, but I did have my sleeping bag, put down the seats in the car and just sleep there.
So you just slept in the car overnight?
Yes.
Did you have a machete with you there?
No, I didn't, because that's a little bit hard to carry on a plane.
Understandably. Brent wanted to know, since he couldn't join us, he wanted to know, what's your one piece of gear that's not photo related?
Duct tape.
Why?
It fixes almost everything. I've used it to hold windows up in cars that the windows won't go back up. I've used it to fix gear, both camera gear and backpacks, clothing. And if you don't have enough Band-Aids, it even goes as a backwoods patch up for yourself.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
Yolanda Santiago White, she asked a good question that I wanted to make sure that we discussed. It said, has she traveled to countries where women have less freedoms? And if so, how was she received or treated? I know you mentioned about, you know, respecting other cultures, but have you ever been to any countries where women are kind of looked down upon?
I haven't traveled the Middle East. I will say that. And that's more because of the career that I was in and that my husband's still in. We have certain rules that many other travelers don't necessarily have. So far as where we're allowed to go and where we're not. So I haven't done a lot of travel in the Middle East. I will say, though, in going to Bali, which is in Indonesia, another Muslim country, the island of Bali is more Balinese, Hindu, there it was more, they felt sorry for me because I didn't have children. It wasn't necessarily because I was female. It was, they were very curious as to why I was traveling versus having a family. Mm. So that's the closest I've really come to being treated differently because I'm a female traveling versus, so it's not really a restriction versus just kind of lifestyle choices.
Have you experienced any other type of sexism at all?
I've come up against photographers when, you know, obviously you go to enough places that everybody wants to photograph, you run into other photographers, and I've had some that kind of just write me off as just another photographer versus, oh, I actually do it seriously. They think I'm just out there with my camera, you know, on vacation versus taking me as a serious photographer. I have come up against that. And a lot of times that one's a little bit harder to get over. I hand them my business card and that normally kind of, oh, you're a photographer. Yeah, I am.
Yeah, you know, Jim Harmer told me that he was going to, that you were going to share that story about when you had to hand him the business card for him to realize that. I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, I don't think he...
It wasn't Jim.
He wasn't one of the ones. It wasn't Jim.
This last one isn't a question, but it is from Annalise Spencer.
Annalise.
So yes. Annalise wanted to say, please tell her I said kudos for being a strong, independent woman, blazing the trail and breaking those glass ceilings.
Awesome.
Kudos from Annalise.
Thank you, Annalise. Mm. Thank you so much.
Well, Bender, it was great having you on. And I know this episode went a little bit long, but I think it was an important one to have because I don't believe that we have focused enough on some specifics for women that are out there listening. I know as a guy and a husband and a father of a daughter, when I go on a lot of the workshops, I'm usually intentional about kind of watching over any other women that I see there. So I think that this will be helpful for us as men to also hear all these thoughts and your opinion on things to kind of just help us keep that in mind. So I appreciate that. Before we end it, tell everybody really quickly where they can get in touch with you.
I'm on Facebook under Lightbender Photography, or you can just send me a personal friend request. Not a problem. I'm also on Instagram at abenderphoto.
Awesome. Thank you. We always end each episode with how to say goodbye in a foreign language. Being that you're in Japan, I kind of think that may be most appropriate. You're touching your forehead as if you don't know how to say goodbye in Japan.
It's such a respectful culture that most of our conversations just end in thank you, which is arigato gozaimasu.
Which is from the domo arigato, misto robato, domo domo.
yes, that
you,
exact
You are
one.
Familiar with that song, right?
I am familiar okay. with that.
I know I'm old, but not that old. Okay. So you don't typically say sayonara? You say domo arigato?
Domo arigato, which is thank you very much.
All right. So we will end it on that. So thank you, Bender, and thank you, listeners, for joining us for this episode of Latitude. Be sure to join us and tag along on our journey with us on the Facebook page. Take care.